Talking landscape photography with Kristen Fletcher and Carwin.
It is Like-Minded. I'm Carwin, joined by Cristiano Fletcher. And a gentleman who, look, if you've ever been into one of those sort of news agents and looked at calendars hanging on the rack and had a look at the back of them, they're normally by this gentleman, and his name is Mr. Nick Rains. And Nick has actually just gotten back from Antarctica last Wednesday. Is that right, Nick?
That's right. Hi, Carwin. Hi, Christian.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Thanks.
Was that a sniffle that we just detected?
Not likely. And if so, I'm not admitting to it.
Yeah.
No, we're good. We're clean. Yeah, well, Antarctica is a clean place. And we've, 16 days down there, and there's nobody on board with any sniffles. So we are as clean as can be.
Oh, well, I see. You just had a little bit of a glitch in your audio then, mate, which is fine. But I think the government is listening to our conversation, and they're just wondering.
Could be. Am I coming through okay there?
Putting your brains in isolation. So what actually happened? So did you?
You know what? I might. Can I go to no video because it's taking a bandwidth, and that might help. So how's that?
Oh, that's good. We just can't see. I just look at a picture of your avatar. That's okay. Sorry, mate. You did go a bit scratchy there, but I'm assuming it's, because you're in quarantine and everyone's in quarantine over there. Everyone's on the internet. Everyone's typing their friends.
Exactly. My internet is by no means the best. We've been trying to get the NBN connected for a while, and it's not available to me until the 30th of June. And right now I'm still on ADSL2, so is a bit of a problem. So video links can be a bit tricky.
Oh, boy.
So Nick, talk us through Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a big white place down south. There you go. Christian's been there too, I believe. It's a pretty awesome place, actually. It was a lot better than I expected. It was a lot more awesome. And we were really lucky with the weather because, again, as Christian knows, there has been issues with weather in the past. And some people go down there and they either never get there or they get to the peninsula or South Georgia and it's all socked in fog and rain. Well, we had 2-3 of the 6 days we were there, crystal clear with, low clouds hanging over the peaks and the water. It's just astonishing. So a really, really great place to visit, and like I said, a lot better than I was expecting.
Yeah, because they've had quite extreme temperatures down there this year or late last year. Did you experience any of that, or was it pretty much below?
Well, it wasn't super cold at all. I mean, not knowing what to expect, it was around about 1 or 2 degrees, just slightly above freezing, because it was March, so it was sort of late summer, early autumn, I suppose. I think I read that they had 16 degrees or something up at one of the research bases or thereabouts, which is astonishing, really.
It is, it is crazy. And look, you went down to Antarctica. What was the purpose of the trip?
Well, the purpose of the trip was to I work for one of the shipping companies that does the Antarctic trips, as well as like the Kimberley, that's Ponant, and their French company. They've got a Sydney office, and I've been working for them for a while doing their brochure pictures. So they provide their own sort of polished pictures of the ship and the waiters and the food and all that. They want the guest experience pictures. So I call it commercial documentary work, which means you're photographing things in a documentary style, which means as it happens, but you're trying to get the polish of commercial pictures, which is suitable for a brochure. So it's a little tricky, but I've been doing it a long time, and obviously they like what I do because they keep coming back for more. So, I've done the Kimberley one 4 times now, I think. I've done all through Asia and Australia and New Zealand. And then this was the first one that they wanted me to do, to go into Antarctica. I've been angling for quite a long time to get this gig because, look, it's work, but, it's really good fun.
Do you have to give lectures to any of the people while you're on the boat, or are you just shooting?
In the past, I've had a role of being guest lecturer on board. A little bit depends on the deal at the time. In this particular case, no, strictly shooting, which means I don't need to do any lectures. I actually did do one because we thought when we were not allowed off the ship in Uruguay that we were going to have to sail all the way back to France. which would have been 21 days at sea. I was approached by the ship's entertainments lady. Would I do some lectures? Of course, I said, that's fine. So I did the first one during our transit from Montevideo up to Rio de Janeiro. But normally I don't do the lectures. No, I just photograph things as they happen and send them back off to head office.
Yeah. And obviously you were down there with all your Leica gear. Is that?
Pretty much the same stuff you've got there.
Oh, yes. You noticed. Yeah.
I do have a slight advantage. I have a CL as well, which when I stick that on the big zoom, gives me a bit of extra reach for wildlife stuff because it's an APS-C sensor, you see.
Yeah, right.
It works beautifully on the 90-280. So we'll have to get one of those too.
Oh, boy. And I had another mate of mine, Wesley. He says, oh, Christian, you must get the... what was it? The 90 mil SL 90.
Oh yeah.
What's that? An F2 or something like that?
Yeah,
or
the 90 mil Summicron F2. Yeah. Sweet lens.
Yeah. He says that's the best lens he's ever used. You must get one of those, Christian. Yeah, you know,
you've got to get one. I've got the 50 mil Summicron with me here right now, and they're all brand new designs. They're all like Peter Carber, Leica's main lens designer, has really pulled one out of the hat here, and they're just, I don't know. It's just something about them, that the 90 mil in particular.
Yeah.
Nick, you're an ambassador for Leica. I mean, you run the Leica Academy. Mate, where did all this come from? Were Leica just sort of plotting in the background with, you know, Panasonic and, you know, where did all this come from? Because, you know, I've taken delivery this week of a Panasonic S1R, which DigiDirect and Panasonic were kind enough to send to me, and Fletcher's got one as well, just to test out. And look, this thing is capable of 187 megapixels, and I think, Christian, you described it as potentially a phase killer.
Might have said that in confidence, but
we'll see how it goes. Where did this come from, Nick?
Very progressive. I mean, you know, not to lose the political word, but in a real sense, they are very good at the new technology, but they don't bring it out. They're not early adopters. This is the key thing. They tend to sit back and see what everybody else is doing, let it mature, and then bring it out, introduce it into cameras with their own spin on things. So we're still waiting to see the high resolution mode on the SL2. It was due first quarter 2020, which of course is now. We're just in the second quarter. So with all this, you know, virus stuff around, I know that everyone's on holidays now at Leica HQ because it's Easter. So I think that might have been delayed, but I don't know that for sure. So when they do new technology, they do tend to let it come to a point where it's really, really good before they put it in their cameras.
Where did this, relationship, how did this relationship with Panasonic come about? I mean, you know, the Leica lenses are interchangeable with the S1R. You know, where did that come from?
Well, it's a strategic partnership because there's also Sigma involved as well. And last year they announced this alliance with this L-mount alliance, they're calling it, which allows some Sigma lenses to fit onto Leica cameras. And, you know, basically it's a lens mount that they've licensed to the other players. Now, Panasonic obviously have a relationship with Leica, which I can't really talk about a great deal, and mostly because I don't know much about it, but there are some aspects of it which we're not supposed to talk about, but they clearly have a relationship. There's no secret there. So it actually makes sense for Leica to get a bit more involved in that, and particularly with the Sigma lenses, because there are lenses that Sigma make which Leica don't make, so it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, I haven't obviously I've got all my new Leica gear, and I'm loving it. I have to say I've been out in the dark for the last 10 years. Look, sure, I've been shooting with a camera that's very capable for landscapes, and it can produce probably some of the best images you'll ever see. But there was always something missing from my repertoire, and that was the ability to see in the dark and not be bound to tripods and all these sort of things, and using ISOs above, you know, 200, and being able to get a usable shot. And now obviously phase have moved on with their CMOS sensors and stuff, but one thing I really found with the Leica was I felt like I was back in the fold, back with all the other guys that I would see with live view and being able to focus and check focus and
focus is good.
Yeah, focus is great. I think it's an important part. You know, it's not everything.
It's one up there.
Yeah, but so it's been really exciting. And you know what? I actually went outside and photographed some night skies the other day, which I haven't done for so long. In fact, I think the last time I actually did any of that was when I had the little Fuji cameras that I was mucking around with. So
it's good, that sort of stuff. It really is.
Yeah, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm part of a gang again. You know, it's like, yeah, oh man, part of the gang.
Well, you've left one gang and joined another one, really.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, I've left the gang of, you know, uptight pixel peepers to a, you know, to a gang of really cool guys. You know, the Gucci kind of dudes with the, you know, the.
You have to wear loafers now, you know.
I know. I've got to get myself a linen suit, and you know, if I can just go nicely with my Leica. But I do love it, and it's awesome. And thanks for putting me in that direction, Nick. Because obviously I used yours once. Remember we were up at Malawa shooting some stuff in UCI, and I was using my Sigma, my Quattro, trying to get. I was going, oh look, I can get these sharp every now and then, and then he said, oh, have a look at this, Christian, and I. Had this Leica, and was that the CL that you gave me?
CL, yeah, you had the CL,
and it focused so quickly on the subject, and I'm just going, oh, this is so freaking easy. No wonder you get all these good shots, and I'm struggling trying to get one sharp, and it was just sharp every time. So,
if you want to see, obviously, you've got your gallery is not accessible at the moment, I believe, because you've shut the doors for the time being. But if anybody wants to see the results from these cameras, the two Leica stores in Sydney and Melbourne, which I believe are still open as we speak, have an exhibition. Sorry, Melbourne, not Sydney. Melbourne store has an exhibition of the work that I shot for that project, including those pictures at Mullawa. And they're done as sort of 20 by 30 inch prints, and they look pretty good, as you'd expect. So it's certainly a very capable camera in a different direction to what you're used to.
Yeah, it is. It's good. It's opening up all these new creative ideas and possibilities and stuff. So, yeah, I'm loving it, mate. Really good, and I'm looking forward to, you know, getting a few extra Sigma lenses and stuff. And
I was supposed to have the 105 portrait lens on loan for a while from the importer. But obviously that's gone by the wayside for the time being, because I'm told that's a nice lens. There's also some other ones that they do. There's a 12 to 24, I think, or thereabouts, like a super wide zoom. I've shot with that very, very briefly. One of my workshop guests had one, and I did take a few frames, and they're impressive, but I haven't really had a chance to analyze them totally yet.
Yeah. So tell us about the second half of your recent cruise, mate. I mean, obviously Antarctica you described as being awesome. You got beautiful light, and it's an amazing place to photograph. What happened when you were just about to finish the cruise?
Well, yes, it was. You know, those little moments where everything changes. I got friendly with a BBC film crew who were on board doing a documentary on a scientist who's recording noise pollution, and they wanted to go down to Antarctica to record silence, which apparently is very difficult to find. So there's another story in that. But anyway, they were nice people, and we were just having some drinkies on the front deck as the sun goes down and having had a really good trip. And then this voice comes over the loudspeakers from Captain Devoisin. Excuse me, my dear guests, I need to call you to the theater, everybody, immediately, because the Uruguayan authorities have refused us disembarkation. And that's that mood of, that was awesome too. Oh dear, shit. This is pretty bad. So there was a lot of uncertainty. And I think that was the hardest thing. We never really knew what was going to happen. We did know that things were happening, but obviously there was a lot of work done by the cruise ship company, Ponant, and it gradually escalated to the point where the Australian ambassador to Argentina and to Uruguay was involved. There was an ex-French ambassador to somewhere who was involved, and it was going through diplomatic channels. Turns out, this is just bad luck, that they closed the ports 1 hour before we got there. That's why we found out an hour after we got there. And the president of Uruguay, who was the one who made the call, had just come into office on the 1st of March. And I think this was about 2 weeks later. Yeah. So having said, I am closing the ports to protect our people, he was not in a position to backtrack on that and make exceptions. So there was this sort of political angle to everything, because we knew and we could prove that we were completely free of any virus because we'd been at sea for 16 days and we'd been taking temperature checks the whole time. Yeah. Very, very diligent. And I have to say, Ponant were superb for this whole process. They did keep us informed as much as they could. We had daily briefings and they worked very hard and they never dropped the level of service, which was kind of interesting because we're obviously used to that level of five-star service, and they kept up the standard the whole time. Wow. Which made us very comfortable. It was a bit, it's kind of weird because we felt a bit guilty about it, like, come on guys, just settle down and give us sandwiches, we don't need silver service every night, you know, let's just, we're all in it together, you know what Australians are like. Anyway, they were really, really good, the company. So it was that uncertainty, but we were never confined to cabins because Christian and I have a mutual friend who is currently sitting on a ship off Uruguay cabin, you know who I mean, and he doesn't know how he's going to get home. And I believe they're stuck in there for another 2 weeks, but I don't know that for certain. Yeah.
Nick, have you spoken to Peter Eastway?
By Facebook message, not in person, but yes, I have.
How's he doing? Because we've been trying to get him. But
You know, he's a chirpy guy. He's a positive guy, and a couple of his messages, there was a slight tone of, I'm really over this, he keeps his chin up, and he's been through difficult times in the past, and he'll get through this one. I mean, they're all comfortable, they're all safe, and I believe that nobody tested positive for COVID-19. They had a fever with six people, I believe, on board, but the test all came back negative, but the Uruguayan authorities are not taking that at face value. I think they've got to test again. And the last I heard was that they were going to insist on a 14-day quarantine anyway before they let them off. So that's where I'm up to with my communications with Pete. So another colleague who was stuck on a Silver Seas ship in Recife in Brazil, he was allowed off eventually and sent home. That's Pete De Vries. And there was a happy ending there because they were all released and he got back. But he's sitting in his bedroom now because he's quarantined in his own household, but he's the only one in quarantine and nobody else is. So he's being fed to the door by his wife. He's managing all right. So,
great. Yeah. Well, it's actually, this kind of reminds me of when I had my vasectomy because I was
changed the subject totally.
Yeah. It didn't go on for 14 days, but for 4 days I lay in bed and my wife bought me food, and it was the most wonderful time in my life. So
packets of frozen peas, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they were kind of frozen avocados. That's what they were.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I'm the guy. I've got a fairly positive spin on all this. I mean, sure, my gallery's closed and. You know, it makes it a bit harder to make a living. But I was walking with Jen this morning because, you know, we go out and we're down here and there's no one around and we just walk around the block and there's no traffic noise. Normally we've got a busy road not far from our house and it's all the traffic going out to Bunker Bay Resort, out to Pullman Resort there.
For the listeners, this is Dunsborough. Busy road doesn't even begin to describe it compared to everybody else.
Yeah, three cars.
I had to cancel some airfares that I'd had with Qantas, and you can only do that. You can only get a refund if you ring in. So I rang in about 4 o'clock in the morning because I was awake. And the lady there said, we got chatting and she was working from home. She said, it's like a perpetual Sunday, and I thought that was quite a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it is actually. I've never seen it this quiet down here in 30 years. When I first moved down, it was just like this. You know, I'd go out and there would never be anyone around. You never see another car, and it's what it's like at the moment. So I'm kind of liking that. I'm liking that kind of feeling that, hey, I've got this awesome place all to myself. So yeah, I'm a little bit selfish in that. You know.
We're very fortunate. You know, well. Yeah. It's where I live, as you know, is not dissimilar, and we've got our little sanctuary here. But it makes me feel a little bit sort of, I don't know, I feel I count my blessings and I recognize my good fortune, and that's about all I can really do. We're just hunkering down, keeping ourselves to ourselves, and hoping all this passes successfully. We'll have to see what happens with the economy and everything, but it is a bit of an abstract thing in a way from this perspective.
Yeah, what have you said? Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, you go, Fletch.
I was going to say, what have you done in regards to your work now, mate? Because obviously a lot of what you do is touring and workshops and stuff like that. Are you – obviously they've been put on hold now. Yeah. Are you planning on getting back to those as soon as you can, or are you going to just work on the online stuff more? Or?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. We've got a meet, I've got a Zoom meeting tomorrow with the guys down in the head office tomorrow morning to discuss strategies. But basically, we've postponed everything until June at the latest. I think that will be pushed back as well. I suspect we'll be cancelling pretty much everything this year, but we'll see. We're keeping options open, but yeah, we're moving to online situation like a lot of people, and we'll be starting hopefully next week some free webinars, and I'll be adding more video content for people to watch, and then we'll have some paid products as well. I'm going to do a big Lightroom course, which will be a multi-module thing, which people will have to buy that one, but the rest of it'll be mostly free.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting, isn't it? A lot of people are working from home now, and it's actually working. Maybe is this a new way of us going forward once this crisis has ended?
Well, that's another very good question, actually, because I don't think that what I'm doing now will come to an end naturally. I think it'll become something that we continue doing. In fact, funnily enough, or ironically, it's something I've been pushing for a couple of years now, this sort of content marketing online learning facility, and it's never really got to the top of the list. But now, I mean, I've been working, 8-10 hours a day since I got back, solidly on upskilling in how this stuff all works. And if you want to do something really basic, it's really simple. You can just do it on your phone, or you can do it through YouTube Live or Facebook or something, or Skype, whatever. But if you want to get a little bit more sophisticated about it, and if you want to turn it into something a bit more professional, there's quite a learning curve. And if you go looking for webcams now online, you won't find any in stock anywhere. It's like some people panic buy toilet paper. Us techno nerds panic buy streaming gear.
that's true. Actually, that is true, Nick. About you, I would imagine you thinking about all that techie stuff. I must
get. You know me too well. Yeah. I've had to slap myself on the wrist a few times when I've been trawling through cool black magic gear or something. Ooh, I could just do with those.
Ooh, yeah,
no, shiny. You don't need that.
Yeah. Well, you like your shiny objects.
Well, the SL2 makes a good streaming camera to bring it back on brand, because you can plug in a USB cable, charging cable, whilst the battery's in it, and you can run it off the mains. So you don't need to, the battery won't go flat on you. Yeah. It certainly isn't. That's always an issue with streaming cameras, because the camera that Christian, you're probably using your laptop camera, at the moment. Yeah, mm-hmm. It looks fine. You've got a nice setup behind you. It looks great. It looks quite professional. Still a little bit up your nose. It's that you're still looking down at it a little bit. The camera's eye level, you get a slightly better look. Like tilt the thing up, but it's still a laptop wide angle. If you shoot with a higher end camera with a 50mm lens or something, you can then get a more portraity look, out of focus background, green screen, whatever you want to do. And I mean, you can take this to the nth degree, but I think a more professional look to a video broadcast will obviously be a useful thing in terms of, maintaining viewers and so on. But at the end of the day, it's all about the content. And I have a tendency to get sidetracked by that side of things when I really should be concentrating on the content of it rather than how it looks. Maybe, I need to balance it out a little bit. And that will become apparent as time goes by.
Yeah, that's true about the content, because I've obviously watched video tutorials from people, and sometimes they're very polished looking, but their content is a bit they tend to rabbit on a bit too much about things. They talk about, okay, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to change. We're going to soften this skin, and we're going to do this technique. And anyway, let me tell you a little bit more about this person and what I did this morning for breakfast.
And then also every other sentence, a lot of presenters say, and we're just going to go ahead and, I'll go ahead and, you just go ahead and. Stop saying go ahead and. It's really annoying.
Oh, do you know what
if I ever say that, you've got to tell me.
Do you know what I hate is when they start to make a point and they go, okay, but we're going to get to that later.
Yeah.
Those YouTube tutorials, they talk for about half an hour about themselves, And then, yeah. Oh, it does matter.
Yeah, there's going to be a big shift in all that stuff, I think, because there's a few. I've been obviously watching quite a few tutorials recently just to find out some things. And you've got to wade through a lot of dross to get to the good stuff. And that's one of the things. Like some people learn better from videos. Some people from person to person, you know, like live tutorials, you know, going to a workshop. Some people are good with books. I'm better with books, which is no surprise to a lot of people. Videos, I tend to nod off because you can't fast forward them. Well, you can, but you might miss them. Whereas a book, you can speed read and then, oh, that's the bit I wanted. Mm-hmm. Whereas the video, I find it very, I really want to, you know, yeah, I know that. What, you know, yeah, I want to get to the good stuff. And this is why, as we were talking about, the fluff can be very distracting. And they're not a very efficient learning method unless they are very tightly presented.
Do you know the best, the most efficient learning method?
Actually doing it.
No, having you explain it, because yeah, most of my best techniques, Nick will say, hey, Fletch, have you seen this? You do this, and this. I've just seen this one, and check it out. And it's like, oh, okay, thank you. That's not enough. So yeah, a lot of my good techniques, Nick has just told me, and that's the easiest way, because they sit down and just go, you do this, push that button, turn that, pull that lever, shoot, and out it comes.
Don't you reckon that's amazing, though, because – what you're talking about, you could do a tutorial on YouTube and it would take half an hour, but someone like Rainsy goes, oh, you just do this, and this, and like it's literally 10 seconds and you get it.
Well, that's what I'm hoping to do. I'm hoping to make them very tight. And also, like, for instance, just to give you an idea, my plan for my Lightroom course is I'm not going to go through all the things Lightroom can do, what all the buttons will do, and what all the options are, which is more of a comprehensive sort of manual thing. What I want to do is explain how I do it.
Yeah.
This site is a recipe. Like, do it like this, and this, and again, with the caveat, this is how I do it. Take from it what works for you. That is why I do it. And that particular approach is how I've done all of my workshops over time. And people seem to respond to that. They want to be told what to do. They don't want to be told all of these options. And then they go, well, now what do I do? They want to go, yeah, if we do it this way and it works. And that's what they want to know.
Well, I was waiting for you to get home and get relaxed so I could ask you what settings I should have on my SL2. So,
yeah, we can talk about that.
Tell me, what do I need to put in? Which one do I, okay, what's, you know?
Does anyone know the expression RTFM?
Well, that doesn't come with a manual, does it? Or does it?
Yeah, you just download it.
That's easy to go, hey, Rainsy. You poor bugger. I mean, you are the walking encyclopedia and reference manual for all things bright and shiny. So, you know, you're always going to get that from me, I'm afraid.
Oh, sorry, boys.
You did put your hand up.
We had a chat with Tony Hewitt just recently, and we asked him this question as well. Look, we're all, you know, sort of cooped up in hibernation and all that sort of stuff. Mate, where is, you know, where's landscape photography going to go out of this, do you think, Rainsy?
Well, I should be a little bit more clear about what I do. I don't do landscape photography. I haven't for a long time. It was only ever a small part of what I do, mostly because I'm more of a documentary photography, so I may not be the best qualified person to comment on that. But I've often, with a few exceptions, I find a lot of landscape photography quite boring these days. You know, there's some people doing some really great work, and I could probably list them, but they might only be half a dozen people. But the classic landscape has been so done, and they're not that hard to shoot from a technical point of view. It's really F8 and B there, isn't it? And I don't mean to talk down on this, but I don't have a great deal of interest in landscape photography for its own sake. It becomes a part of a larger repertoire in documentary work. Obviously, you've got to set the scene and show the place, but it's also about the things in the place, the people who interact with that place. And on that basis, I'm far more interested in shooting people, photographing people these days, and their interactions with the environment than actually the landscapes themselves. I've sort of moved past it. It doesn't make sideways. It's not an up or a down. It's a sideways thing, really. So how that leaves landscape photography, really couldn't say. What did Tony say? What was his opinion?
I think he said it's screwed.
He pretty much did, actually.
Yeah, no, I can't remember. What did he say? Because, you know, I don't.
Maybe you said, if you haven't got an aeroplane, you haven't got any chance.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, I think landscape photography will always be there. It'll always, it'll bounce back. And I think it'll actually come out, will probably come out with some more creative work, because people are confined and they'll have more time to think about it. They'll have more time to research. They'll have more time to work on their images. So we might get some better stuff from it. But I do agree with you about, you know, some of the work is you know, pretty repetitive and done and overworked and all that. And look, I'll put my hand up every time as one of those people that's done that in the past and still do it.
I guess you've got to ask yourself, what's it for? I mean, I'm a commercial photographer. I make a living out of this. I don't do as much fun shooting as I used to. I tend to shoot when I've got a reason to shoot. So if someone says, we want to photograph landscapes, I'll photograph landscapes. If someone says, photograph people, I'll do people. If I've got a project like my recent book on, you know, festivals that you helped me with at Mullawa, Fletch. But for its own sake, well, if you enjoy it, enjoy it. And it doesn't have to be for any other reason than that. I mean, you know, the only difference between an amateur and a professional is that we're given a task by somebody else, and an amateur is not given a task by someone else. It has nothing to do with quality or talent or anything. It's just the motivation is the difference, nothing else.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I'm more motivated now, I think, because I feel like I have more time. Like, I don't have to go into the gallery today. That's something that I haven't had to experience for years. You know, I've been going to the gallery every day for years and years, 20 years. I've had to, you know, deal with business and that side of it. Now it's like, okay, well, no one's coming in. I don't think we've got any orders. Mm. So what am I going to do today? Oh, I might edit a photo, or I might go out and take a photo. Or I've actually just went and bought some new light stands. So I've got, I'm going to pull my lights out and start doing some still lifes and stuff.
That's
like
a good
that.
One. Yeah.
And my daughter wants to do some portraits, so you know, we'll get, not that we can photograph anyone other than our family, but you know, she's got her brother
you
there.
A good-looking family, so you know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, my son's just shaved his hair off completely.
Oh, has he?
You know, almost bald.
Go Shay.
And he looks like a little criminal now, and he goes, "Oh, I don't know if I like it." And I said, "Well,
it's too
well, just wait
now.
For a while."
Yeah, but it's really short. But yeah, so we're going to explore those things and just have a bit of fun with that. And,
I've been asked by our marketing people to come up with some what you can shoot at home information. And so my first reaction was, oh, I don't know about that. That's not really me. But then I thought, well, hang on a sec, I should embrace it. So I got them to send me the little macro lens, little 60mm macro that fits on the CL. And next week I'm going to be looking around within my boundaries to see if I can find something creative, and so maybe that will stimulate a bit more interest in just shooting for fun. We'll see.
What about a severed head of a brush turkey or bush turkey, whatever it is?
There is that. I've got a 20-year-old cat, but I think photographing cats is probably a little bit passe. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I know.
You photographed a pineapple the other day, didn't you, Fledge?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. There's been a few around, not at the moment, but I'll find something.
But the macro would be fantastic, and you know, to get really nerdy and get right into some insects and stuff like that. And
focus stack.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah, well, nerdy's got Rainsy written all over it.
Actually, here's a thought. Can you take a frame from the video from the SL2? I guess you can. Put your macro on. Does that macro fit on the SL2 or only on the CL?
Yeah. No, it fits the macro. Yeah.
So you start the record the video, and you, instead of focus stacking, you just change the focus while the video is running, and then you just combine all those frames into one shot. I'm pretty sure that's what people do. Have you done?
That's a really interesting idea, actually, because if you just did a very slow focus pull from one end of the object to the other end of the object, and then at a reasonably high shutter speed, so each image is actually sharp, which is obviously what you don't want often in video, but for this you would, then you could export as frames from Final Cut or Premiere or something.
Yeah,
you'd have to find those frames that you wanted. You could mark it somehow, and then try that in Zyrene or in, you know, Helicon. That's an interesting idea. Okay.
There you go. I want to see you do that.
And on the fly, you know, inspiration there, dude.
Yeah. Because I've got this new Samsung phone. I'm not sponsored by Samsung or anything, but the Galaxy S20 Ultra. It's very very shiny, very pretty. You'd like it, Nick, with all the cameras on it. But they talk about doing that by pulling just a frame out of the video. And then
limited on resolution because 4K, what's that, 4,000 and whatever it is by 3, I don't know, I can't remember the numbers, but it's about 4,000 by 3,000. So that's 12. Oh no, that's 12 megapixels, isn't it? Yeah, 4 by 3.
Well, fortunately, Nick, my Samsung Galaxy S20 Ultra shoots shoots in 8K.
Smoking, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
For about 10 seconds
use
in the
your damn phone then, man. Exactly. No, that's an interesting idea, Fletch. I might have to give that some thought. I suspect there'll be some limitations with it, but in principle, yeah, that could work.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So we've got all sorts of cool things to do. You know, I'm just thinking about cooking and making the perfect coffee. I haven't got a coffee machine, but the Thermomix, you can make a latte in the Thermomix.
The perfect instant coffee.
So that's, you can photograph the process, or you can film it, or you can you know, stream it or Zoom it or whatever you want to do. We're actually having a Zoom call tonight with my writing buddies, and it's a beer one. So you just rock up with your beer, and we all sit around and look at each other, silly faces. And
can you just start? Please try and remember not to take your laptop to the toilet with you, though.
That's good advice, actually. Yeah, good advice. Who does that?
That she must have been. She must have had a desktop computer and the laptop computer, so she was maybe working with both. But funny story.
If you're listening to this, we were talking about that lady who was. This is a viral thing going on at the moment. Who was in that meeting with about 20 of her work colleagues. And forgot that they were broadcasting live, and just picked a laptop up and went to the toilet with it. So they're all just sitting there in shock while she's going to the bog.
You can imagine the thought. She's not. Oh my! Oh she is. Oh my god!
It is so
okay. Funny. Yeah. And it's recorded and on the cloud.
So what? So companies like Leica, Nick. What do you think? This will have any effect on them, and how is that going to change their operations? So you said that their stores are still open. I guess most people buy
stores are open because there are still people actually coming in and buying expensive cameras, which is a surprise. I think the Melbourne store is the only Leica store still open in the world. I think Melbourne and Sydney. I think they've closed them in most other countries. I heard that from someone recently. But one of the things that obviously this is all exposed, not specifically Leica, but certainly will affect them, is extended supply chains. A lot of components for anything complicated you buy, or anything even half complicated, some parts will come from a long way away, not mentioning any countries in particular. And that supply chain has been broken, and that means you could have a very very complex bit of gear waiting for one very very simple cheap bit of plastic, which is really important, and if you can't get it, the whole thing comes to a grinding halt. So I know that at the factory, the Leica factory in Wetzlar, they were busy making as many cameras as they could with all the parts that they did have for when they shut down, because they will shut down at some point. So they were working double shifts to actually get as many made as possible before that. And I suspect that will apply to other people, because without a product to sell, any manufacturer has got a major cash flow problem.
Yeah.
I don't know how company policy works, what reserves they have. You know, companies like Apple have always been well known for carrying massive cash reserves. I believe that before Apple got quite so huge, I don't know if it applies now, but a few years ago, I was I remember reading that Apple carries a year of operating cash, so they can go for a year without actually going bust, which is amazing. Most companies are struggling to do a month or 2 months. Depends on the way the company is set up, and I don't know how Leica is set up, but certainly it's going to make a few changes, and we'll have to see how it all pans out.
I hope the IT nerds are working on that high definition mode, because I'm assuming that would just be a software, like a firmware.
Yeah, I mean that you'd imagine that can be done from working from home with some collaborative stuff. And I would also imagine, and I don't know this for certain, I might even find out tomorrow, because I'll be talking to Connor McGill, our national sales manager, and he should know. He's also our technical guy, because the hard work should already been done. Surely, if it was due for release this quarter, then I imagine it's very, very close to release.
We're just talking about the high-res mode in the Panasonic S1R, and I guess the Leica will be similar to that. The only criticism of that high-res mode is that you can't you can only go what is it, 1 second?
I heard there was only 1 second was the maximum.
So interesting.
That's the only criticism, and like when you think about it, you just sort of think, well, okay, if you had a 26 or 28 second exposure, wouldn't you just let that exposure go through and then just basically copy that file times 8 to give you the same sort of resolution? So I'm just wondering
it doesn't work like that.
No, it shifts the sensor, doesn't it?
Yeah, it shifts the sensor. That's the clever bit. It has to shift the sensor by precisely 1 pixel, which if you think about a 47 megapixel image or sensor, that's a pretty small amount. So that's a whole – so it shifts it so each pixel – can measure each of the three colors individually, because right now you're capturing three black and white images and then interpolating between them. It's that's your Bayer array system. And so most of the color information is basically fake. The only one that's exception to that is the Sigma cameras with those foveon sensors. So this allows the actual accurate color of each particular pixel to be measured, but it just has to do it in three separate operations. And that's a simplistic way of looking at it, because Fletch, I think it does it in more than three exposures, doesn't it? Doesn't it do eight or
it's
something?
It's eight exposures, yeah.
Yeah, like I say, I haven't seen it yet, so I have no information about how it works, but I'm not sure why there are eight. I don't know.
Yeah, but look, I've taken some shots with the S1R, and this is why I'm so excited about what the Leica can do. The files are quite incredible. The resolution and the size, it spits out. You know, if you convert it to a 16-bit TIFF, it's 1.05 gigabytes.
I can feel a Mac Pro on the horizon for you then.
Well, yeah. The funny thing is, I took a shot with the S1R, and I had it on my computer. I said, right, the sky's a bit bland. I've got a sky from the IQ4 150 borrowed the IQ4 from Phase One. So I thought I'll just grab that sky, because it's 150 megapixels as opposed to 187 megapixels. It's pretty close. Mm-hmm. And I dropped it on, and it was amazing how much smaller that phase file was on top of this.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, oh my god.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was like
I've never heard the word small and phase used in the same sentence before.
Yeah, it's like, incredible.
I want to see what happens when things move, though. That's what I want to see, water.
Yeah, it's the water in the shot that I got, it kind of looked a bit kind of strange, but it didn't look bad strange. But then in the foreground, it was a really windy afternoon, and there was some of those little grasses that you get on sand dunes, and you could see each shot, it's kind of blurred. They've got different modes, and they can. I think one mode will blur any transitions between the different frames.
Right.
And it like I said to Carmen, I said it doesn't look bad. It just looks a little bit different. But ideally, you don't want anything to move. But I went out that afternoon, and I shot everything in that high def mode. I only got about 16 shots out of the card, before I had to start deleting stuff. No, it was actually a bit more than that. But it was really I realized there's a lot more landscapes that I photographed that don't move. So for me, it wasn't a real issue. And if you went out into the forest on a really still day, you probably wouldn't notice, you know, and anything that's far in the distance. But
that's always been the case, though, hasn't it? Because if you're shooting at low ISO, and you're going to get, if it's windy. So there's obviously would be ways of getting around that, like, you know, shoot a normal shot and blend back in the water or something. You don't need high res for water, particularly if you're doing long exposures. So you can do some workarounds. But I the only results I've seen are from one of the Sonys, which brought in this process a model or so ago. I don't know which model it was. And I just downloaded the sample image that they supplied. And I remember being quite impressed with the absolute sharpness and color fidelity. So like everybody, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing on the Leica. Thing about the Leica, though, which hopefully will give us an advantage, is that those SL lenses, particularly these new Summicrons, are basically designed for 100 plus megapixel capture.
Okay.
So they're kind of future proof. So that's the word from the top man, Peter Carver. And so everything they've done in the manufacturing process and the design is aiming for 100 plus megapixel sensors down the track. So which is why they look so good.
Yeah. Well, I heard from a mate who's got the S1R. And I'm assuming this will be the same with the Leica as well, as that the signal noise is a lot lower. So when we did a handheld shot with his one, and we made a big print from it, and the sky was so beautiful and blue, it was clean as anything. It was like you basically just got your printer and you printed a blue swatch.
Like a graphic Illustrator file or something.
Not, there was nothing in it. There was no imperfections, no noise, no pixels, weird. Well,
this is in high res mode we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense because, you know, noise is random. So when you've got multiple exposures, it tends to cancel itself out from one frame to the next. So that actually makes sense, I think.
Yeah. I'd never seen anything like it. I would look at this guy and it was so creamy and smooth and just pure, beautiful blue.
Well, stop it. You're getting me excited.
Yeah. And the white clouds were all fluffy. The white clouds are fluffy and they were just, it was perfect. And that was just handheld.
One of the things that I have tested the SL2 against the S1H, but not the high res mode. When we were in Myanmar, we had one of our mutual friends, Gordon. You know Gordon,
yep,
who has every bit of camera gear under the sun. And he had the S1R with him, and I had the SL2, which he hadn't seen yet, amazingly, because it was only like the day after it was released. And we put the 90mm Summicron on, both cameras, so we shot the same picture at the same exposure, and then we had a pixel peep. And we both agreed that the SL2 was crisper. It had better edge definition. In the old film terms, you'd say it had higher acutance. So, and that's a signal processing thing. Because the SL2 is not a Sony sensor. It is not the same as the sensor in the Panasonic. That's absolutely a fact. In the past, there's Sony have made sensors for Nikons and their own cameras, but it's what you do with the signal, which is very, very important. And even if it was the same sensor as the Panasonic, which it's not, but even if it was, it could still be processed in a different way. And that's where the secret sauce is. And I'm finding the images not only twice the resolution as my SL, but also completely and utterly sharper. Oops.
What was that, Carmen? Who's calling you?
It was one of those prank calls from China. Do you ever get those?
You pick
them
day.
Up and it's, yeah. Like, well, what do they actually want?
Yeah.
They have to record it,
Yeah.
So what's on the horizon for Nick Rains?
A lot of online webinar stuff, I think. I can't imagine that I'll be going anywhere for the next few months. So I'm planning basically on spending my allocated days with Leica as generating online content for our marketing people, and basically keeping people interested when they can't actually buy the products, keeping things ticking over. And it may be that we generate an entirely new market for this sort of material in terms of online learning and webinars and you know, online courses. We will see. But yeah, I can see me spending a lot of time on my computer over the next few months.
Yeah, same. Which is, you know, I've spent a lot of time on my computer anyway. But you know. So it's no real biggie for me. It's just the gallery side of it's the biggest problem. Yeah. But
well, this is the thing. We've also got to generate some revenue for ourselves. I mean, you know, I'm not employed by Leica. I'm a contractor. But at some point, if the company is in difficulty, then they start shedding people. Well, yeah. You know, I don't have any protection per se, so I'm still self-employed and with all that goes with it, so it is still a worrying time, but as long as I can make myself indispensable.
Well, you're indispensable to us, so thanks for spending the time this morning with us. Well, actually it's probably lunchtime there for you now, isn't it? So
it is indeed.
Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Nick. It's always good chatting, mate. I love to hear what you've been up to and what you're doing, and I love talking about Leica these days because that's what we do. But also a big shout out to DigiDirect and Panasonic for lending Karen and I an S1R to muck around with for a bit. So having fun with that. So I've got the two coolest cameras in the world currently in my bag, and I'm just loving life. So it's great. But yeah, thanks, Nick. Thanks for
not a problem. Pleasure as always.
Thanks,
and we'll. How can we find out about your tutorials? Are they all be on your website or?
Well, we should have the first webinar Friday week, so a week tomorrow, assuming that my plans go ahead. We do send out a newsletter to our, you know, people who sign up for the newsletter, but information would generally be on the Leica Academy website, which is www.leica-academy.com.au, or just Google it, and the information will be there. So we'll be kicking that off fairly soon. We've just got to work out our strategies.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what you have in your background.
actually we're gonna post a picture of Nick's background shortly to our Instagram, so have a look. But I've got to say, Fletch, out of all the, you know, 50 or so podcasts we've done, he's got the best setup, the best looking office.
Yeah,
and he's got that bokeh thing happening. We're gonna post it on Instagram. If you're not a member of our Instagram yet, just do a search on Instagram for Light-Minded Podcast. Nick Rains, mate, thanks very much for your time.
Absolute pleasure, guys.
Cheers, Nick.